This is CliffCentral.com.
All right, everybody, it is time to check in with one of our favorite South Africans, somebody who I haven't seen for a little while now, and he's always busy. He's always doing 100 things at the same time. Eugene Khoza is here, and we need to catch up, see what's going on with the man. Do we give him the full fanfare, Mubs?
It's only right.
All right, here it is. The full 22-seconder. This one's reserved for real celebrities. The audience. Let's go crazy. There he is, Eugene Khoza. How are you, bro?
Morning, guys. How are you?
Nice to see you, man.
Nice to see you. It looks like we meet once a year.
I know. Was it around this time last year?
It was around your birthday. Actually, it was on your birthday.
Oh, that's right.
On your birthday.
And is that why you brought me a present this time?
Yes.
Yeah, Eugene got you a present the last time as well, ne?
He wrapped it. Did you wrap
You're
it?
You're very nice.
I wrapped it this morning and I made the bow this morning because I pulled it from my bookshelf. I said, guide me towards where Gareth needs to be.
Okay,
and
so
I went straight into there.
So the book he's bought me is by Dr. Kevin Dutton and Andy McNabb.
Yeah.
And it says, The Good Psychopath's Guide to Success.
Yeah.
How to use your inner psychopath to get the most out of life.
Yeah.
You know like our Gareth very beautiful. Well, then.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. Because I used my intuition to guide me towards this book because it was in my bookshelf. And I've had it for almost 2 years now. And I remember when I bought it, I was dealing with a bunch of dodgy, shady energy characters. And I was like, if I'm going to fight this,
wow,
I must know exactly what I'm dealing with. And this is the book that the guy prescribed for me at the shop. And halfway through it, I had it figured out. I don't think there's anyone who's read this book all the way through. Because if it's written by a Royal Air Marine Force guy who's highly decorated and an Oxford psychology professor who deals with psychopaths, I mean, really.
Andy McNabb. He's the guy who he did all those survival things.
Yes.
And
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Yes.
Good.
And Andy Dutton is an Oxford psychology professor dealing exactly with behavioral psychology and psychopaths. So.
Listen to this. In the pages that follow, we will reveal 7 simple principles that will make you more successful. Mm. We're not interested in what kind of success it is you're after. It could be big. Maybe you want a raise or a promotion, or to clinch the deal that will get you to a raise and promotion. Or maybe it's the small things in life you haven't been able to nail. Putting off making that awkward and embarrassing phone call. Telling the neighbors that you love their chihuahuas, but don't like them dumping on your lawn. Whatever it is, this book is designed to make your everyday needs of everyday people in everyday life, in the workplace, outside the workplace, with friends, with colleagues, with family. It can make you money, save you money, get you out of trouble, get you into trouble, get you preferential treatment.
Get you
this
into
is perfect.
Trouble.
It is
amazing.
This is perfect.
I think from first glance, I was
what
attracted.
What a great book.
I thought it was a lot of hocus pocus mumbo jumbo when I got the book. And I literally
what
thought,
nice
I'm just going
to
glance through it and see what happens. And
what
enjoyed it.
What a kind thing for you to do. Thanks, man.
It's only a pleasure.
So, listen.
Yes.
First things first. A lot of people in this country, like Ben, for example, very upset about what happened with the Springboks over the weekend. Now,
yes.
I don't watch sport anymore. I've never really watched sport.
Same here.
Kind of get roped in.
Yeah.
So you're also able to not get upset by these things.
No.
These things don't bother you at all.
At all. In fact, I find that when people are group upset, I become the most happiest. Because it's almost like they've left the pockets of happiness unattended.
And you can go
and
in and raid.
Grab some for yourself.
You know, I'm like, just leave it on the floor. Please get angry because it's easier. Then I'll go find the pockets of happy.
Yeah.
But don't you get nervous about how sometimes our anger in this country just sometimes reveals the worst in all of us?
I think we have low self-esteem as a country. I think we haven't dealt with that. Mm. Because even if you look at school, the bully had low self-esteem, but it's just that we didn't know what it was called then.
Yeah.
But generally, as a country, we have low self-esteem because we never had entitlement. So it almost seems like in our evolution, we've skipped a certain few parts.
Yeah.
We went from very angry to very apologetic. And then now we don't know how to accept each other, because we never really said sorry. And I remember I tweeted this the other day and I was like, we've never really said sorry. Like, no one came on television and said, I am sorry for what happened.
Mm.
No one said that. So we acclimatized as if everything was normal.
Yeah, there were sons of bitches who were meant to say that at the TRT
exactly.
And they didn't.
Exactly. We had our own group of SS here who never came on television and said, hey, I'm sorry. And, you know, I remember as a kid watching the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. And I remember Desmond Tutu at some point begging people to apologize.
Yeah.
Begging them to admit that they did wrong. And I was like, the impact of that. And I can understand in the 90s, you never thought that you being on television at midday when the majority of people that were offended by your deeds were at work and they couldn't see you. You never thought we would be 20 years later in a position where everyone can just Google the commission and see exactly your words in action. So no one actually said sorry. So we're carrying all of this around, and we looked for little pockets of happiness where we could find them. The Rugby World Cup, Bafana Bafana doing well in the AFCON Cup.
Do you remember that? So many years ago.
The first black pilot. We were just out there scrounging.
The scrounging.
The black billionaire. Give me a nibble of happy. We were there looking for these things.
You're right.
But we never really said, actually, I'm fine with this and I choose that. And now we're acting like we're discovering racists. It's like, I'm like, you can't be racist to me. Like, I always find that weird when someone says someone is being racist. I'm like, you can't be racist to me because you can't tell me something I don't know. And I'm already a black person. So if you call me names as a black person, you're wasting your time.
I need this explained because this is a fairly big deal that what you're saying now is going to get you a lot of heat from both sides. The racists are going to be all over you. And then, what are you trying to say?
Look, I'm saying that you can only be a racist, can only be racist to someone that they are over. So socially, if you are above someone, you can call them a racist name and that will hurt them. But I've never seen two CEOs calling each other racist names. I've never seen a black CEO being called a racist name by a white CEO. It will never happen. It's
right. It's
usually about class and underestimating the other person and trying to degrade them to the lowest of what they are already. So I've never found myself. I don't know anyone who could call me that purely because
you wouldn't
I'm
give a shit.
Under the yes. No. If I am finding myself under them at that position and they'd call me that, they're wasting their time.
And that goes back to self-worth.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's like having a sense of self-respect and I know I'm not what you're calling me.
Yeah.
So why would I give a shit?
Yes. You can't reinforce this low self-esteem I already have. Is you can't do that to me. It's too late for you if you want to do that. You can't.
But don't you think also like patriotism is totally overrated? We started talking about that this morning because there are people who get upset about, you know, the rugby team doing badly or the president embarrassing us internationally or whatever. Like, I don't feel any of that matters anymore.
Yeah.
I think we're in a post-nationalistic world.
Absolutely.
Where, like, it doesn't matter where you're from, really. If you want to be a citizen of a certain kind of a world where people are open-minded, we share ideas and, you know, we can call each other stuff in a jocular, fun way, but we don't have to be mean.
Yeah.
And at the same time, we can be really interested in stuff that's going on that isn't within our borders.
Yeah.
And we can be turned off and disinterested in stuff that's going on inside
our
borders.
You're allowed to, yeah.
You are, right?
Yeah, you're allowed to.
It doesn't matter that, like, what does it mean to be South African anymore? These borders were drawn by people who've been dead for 200 years. We put our hands on our hearts. We wear a little pin with the flag on it. What does all that mean?
And even the colors on the flag, we didn't choose them.
No. State Herald did.
Yeah, some is that his name?
No, the State Herald. A guy called Frederick Brownell.
We didn't choose the color. I think as South Africans, we've never had a choice. Even in the elections. You know, I was saying to a friend of mine, I was like, I watched Parliament in the UK, and I like how they debate. Mm. It's basically two parties. These ones believe in this, and the other ones believe in that. In America, it's the Democrats and the Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
And psychologically, I think at the back of our minds, subliminally, we kind of envied the choices that the Americans had. They had to choose between the Democrats and the Republicans, Hillary and a Donald. We don't have that choice because during democracy, we had this ballot paper full of colors and parties
so
and
names.
But that was our first expression. That's our first taste of democracy, of change, of choice. But we only knew that you were taught avoid national party.
Avoid.
You know what your job is. Vote for anything but. Then it went from that to, oh, you're like this now. You forgot.
Now I'm not voting for you anymore.
Now you're like,
You're the right guy to ask this, because anyone else I'd get into trouble. Don't you get sick of what other people expect you to do because you're black?
Yes.
Do you get tired of people saying to you, you must X, Y, and Z because you're black, and you mustn't X, Y, and Z because you're black?
Yeah.
Like, does that drive you up the wall? Because I don't know how that feels, right? I don't have a tribe.
Yeah.
Like, I don't have, my people, they don't exist.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not in the Portuguese community. I'm not a Greek. Yes. I'm not an Indian. I'm not a black.
You're in the Sutherland alumni.
Yeah, but what is that? But dude, what does that mean? Like, I don't think of myself as English or Scottish or French or any of those things. I don't have any connection.
Yes.
You know, and then people can't push their shit onto me. But if you're a black South African man, you have shit pushed onto you. If you're a black South African woman, you have shit pushed onto you. Then if you're Zulu or you're Tswana or you're Xhosa or whatever, then you have shit pushed onto you.
Absolutely.
That is not your business.
Yes. You almost, and I've heard the argument before, Gareth, and it's funny enough, I was saying this to Anina the other day in an interview. I said, when you are black, and let's just minus the racism of it. It's actually by inherently being a certain gender and being a certain age at a certain time.
Mm-hmm.
You're sort of expected to do things to qualify. The simple example was when I was in primary school in Mamelodi, right?
Mm.
I was in grade 6. The kids that did well in English, right, in English class, got the special program by St. Albans to go there once a week to get extra lessons from the kids that were doing well there. So the prefects that were doing the outreach programs, is now that I know, were giving us these lessons. And I remember we took a Patco bus, then we would go there after school. And I remember one day we walked, in our first day actually, we walked, they had this garden where they had these benches and they would sit and have their lunch there. Mm. And then this white kid said to this other black kid who was there in a blazer just like him, he said, "Hey, look, they're your friends." Then the guy said, "I don't know these people."
"I don't know these kids. I've never seen them a day in my life."
Then I was
okay, so that's wrong on so many levels.
Yes,
so
that's my first at grade. That's my first experience with class and race at the same time.
Yeah.
Because the white guy is saying to this kid, "They're your friends because they look like you."
Yeah.
He's saying, "No, they're from a township school. They're not. I don't know them." So they're talking over each other. And there's a lot of that has just happened. And I was saying, so you carry that with you throughout, because you always have to prove, if I am me and I live in my neighborhood, I have to almost prove that I'm not friends with rowdy black guys that will come and mess up the neighborhood. And that guy that was blasting his music loud, he didn't come to my house. He was actually next door.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to have a big braai with during soccer matches, and I'm not going to slaughter. It's almost like I'm in auto-apologetic mode. And I was saying, the biggest purchase I've made when I was like five years ago was a car I bought, because I bought it because of the wrong intention. Because I was already at the dealership. And then I could already see how the person thought I was not going to buy the car. And my pride wouldn't allow me.
So you bought it because of pride?
I had a five-month-old car parked outside.
Yeah.
I just came here to browse
and
just look around. And then, but the look in the salesman's face, the look that he gave me.
Kind of thought
you're not going to buy this. And I swear to you, because it was stark reality of who I really am. I was just a black guy walking in there with shorts, looking at cars that were over R1 million. Who do I think I was? It hit me. Because you look around and you hear people being called, "Oh, Dr. Sbego, you're here to get your wife's thingy is at the back there." Then you're like, who am I in this maze? So I left the dealership, got into my car, and the next dealership that looked like that one, the same brand, I went there and I bought the car. But it was
you regretted it.
I didn't regret immediately because I had fun in the car. But but after a while is when I take the car to the mall, when I go buy groceries, and I see someone expect me to walk past it. And I was like, but I reinforced the stereotype. I made myself I was the BE guy without the big collar shirt. Is at some point, as that black man, businessman that wants to make it big, if you show up in a crappy car, no one's going to take you seriously. And there was a lot of that that went on. Then you become extra super apologetic, even to your family. You have to show that you're doing well. You have to show that these jokey things that you're telling on stage are really paying the bills and you can buy a house. And it's that low self-esteem that you carry throughout. And it's reinforced by compliments.
But like, where are you now? Because you don't seem to me to be someone who doesn't have a handle on this.
No, I figured it out. I have definitely figured out, because I realized that I think loving myself, and I know it sounds all airy-fairy again, loving myself and understanding myself spiritually, I think went a long way into helping. Because sometimes I'd find myself with people that whose energies would affect me badly. And sometimes it's not even a bad thing. It's not like you walk in intentionally. Because a compliment can soon turn into an insult if you're not very careful. And the fact that you seek approval means that you're susceptible to both. Because rarely does an insult come before a compliment. Rarely. Because your gateway is to see how susceptible you are to what the other person is saying. Then they will give you a compliment. Oh, your outfit looks nice today. Oh, I love that car of yours. But isn't it too expensive for you? Then you're like, where did that come from? Because you are here already. You've already opened the portal. By accepting the compliment, you've already.
So when people compliment you, are you struggling now to take compliments?
I don't struggle at all. I just listen.
So you don't take it on board?
No. Nope, I don't acknowledge a compliment at all.
Because often I'll have to. Someone is being very nice and very genuine, and they're telling me something that is objectively true, and it is complimentary.
Yes,
and
I like that. It's objectively true, but it is complimentary.
And I breeze past because I have struggled to take compliments like you do. I struggle to take it on board.
Yeah,
happy to hear it.
Yeah,
but then you could see the disappointment in them because they're trying to be very genuine and sincere.
Yeah.
They're trying to tell you something that they think you should know about yourself from their point of view.
Yes.
Totally cool.
Yeah.
There's no, as far as I can tell, no hidden agenda.
Yeah.
But I struggle to still take it.
If you think about it, it's also a touchy subject. It happens with religion and obviously with politics, which are totally closely linked.
Mm-hmm.
If someone mentions something that about your personality that they enjoy, they're subliminally encouraging you to be more of that. So they're creating a utopia where people behave the way they enjoy.
Yeah.
So they're kind of giving a dog biscuit for you to sit. And then,
oh shit, okay, no more compliments.
By you taking that, you will start slowly expecting to be that person around them. So when you're about to interact with them, you're like, I better be that thing. The expectation is fully reinforced in you because you accepted the compliment. And then they're like, I only roll with people who understand how you make me feel good. And there are those people that are like energy vampires. Mm. They just latch onto you and then they go, whoosh. And there's a reason why Dracula came as a human but only will bite you as a bat. Is he had to be close enough to bite you.
Yeah.
And we accept that so easily. And I find it very difficult to
take it. What about, because obviously this is amplified by social media.
Yeah.
So now if you're online, the compliments fly left, right, and center, but the insults fly left, right, and center too. And people break each other down because it makes them feel better that they got the upper hand once. Yeah.
I think I enjoy the fact that when I started doing comedy, it was like you have to choose your role in life, and everything, there's a distinct duality towards life that we sort of ignore because we kind of substitute with choice. Is we know there's an up and a down, but we choose a middle. We know there's a left and a right, but we'll always choose a little middle there. Is you have to choose who you are in the soapy of life. Are you the protagonist or the antagonist? And as soon as you know who you are, it's hard for someone to come and define your role. If you are the person that starts shit, it's you. Everyone around you is miffed because of you. If you are the kind of person that's always taking shit, it's you. That's why you feel shit. It's no one else is involved in this soapy but you. You haven't really clearly defined your role because you jump between roles and think that you can be tough with these ones and you can be so soft with these ones and you can and you answer yourself. Choose who you want to be. Embrace your inner psychopath and just know that.
There we go.
Just inherently become who you are. If you are a baddie in this soapy of life, just do you, boo.
Right. Don't worry about other people. You want a grape?
I love grapes. How did you know?
That's very nice.
That's my breakfast for the morning.
Yeah.
Some grapes. They're nice, huh?
Not bad. Grapes. Not bad at all.
You don't want those ones that have gone slightly brown and they get a bit sour?
No.
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 And the fresh. No one needs the pips.
No one needs the pips.
Are those seedless?
They are seedless, definitely. But I like the ones that kind of, they kind of like, make you feel like a Greek or Roman god.
Mm.
Yeah, what was their obsession? Why were they obsessed with grapes?
I don't know. That and the people fanning them. That's apparently the ultimate luxury in ancient Rome.
It was, no. I think the ultimate was being carried.
In a litter.
Yes.
It was called a litter.
It was called a litter.
Or it was called a...
A douchebag mobile.
No, because it was a douche. Imagine you carried through the streets past all these poor people.
Yeah.
Yes.
By four poor people who are employed by you.
Yes.
And you've got curtains to... So you can see out, but they can't
see
in.
And they can't see you.
Yeah.
But it's like almost like smash and grab.
That is a very douche move.
What was the thing called?
It was.
Something... A sedan chair.
Really?
S-E-D-A-N chair.
And what happened if you were fat?
Oh, well, then you needed more than four people.
Basically, it was like having a short wheelbase, a long wheelbase. You had the long wheelbase, more people can come in.
But that was a douchey move.
But don't you love, you see, like, again, one of my biggest problems with people who are always angry or always feel the world's unfair about everything, their whole life is just a disaster, blah, blah, blah.
Protagonist.
Yeah. Those people, I always feel like saying to them, really, you should read a bit of history, because the human story is full of people who've had it way worse than you.
Yeah.
Like, you got to remember, and people don't like it when you bring this up, but 100 years ago, even in some communities, 50 years ago, there was no such thing as consensual sex. Man would get home. Now, this is a real thing. Like, we talk about rape, and it's a problem.
Yeah,
okay?
Absolutely.
But 100 years ago in South Africa, there wasn't a community. No community. White, black, colored, Indian, Afrikaans, English, Tswana, Sisutu, Sizulu. No, there was no such thing as man gets home, says to wife, honey, I don't know how you're feeling, but I'm feeling a little horny. Do you want to?
It's on like Donkey Kong.
It just happened.
Yeah.
She didn't have a say.
Yeah.
Think about how...
It was one of her chores.
Right.
Yeah. She was like... One of your duties.
She's like,
one of her
let me
duties.
Put down the water buckets.
Yes.
Yeah.
Hike up my skirt. And she didn't really have a say.
Yeah.
And if you think about how people didn't have a say about what they got paid, and people didn't have any way of... Like, the world was just a horrible, violent, vicious, terrible place. This is the best time to be alive. So when I
what
see...
What a time to be alive.
When I see students carrying on about, fees, this, and, you know... We want to be we want to have these people's freedom of expression curtailed, and those people shouldn't. And I must always be able to have my say, and I can scream I hate you or whatever. I look around the world sometimes, and I think there's a lot of spoiled people. They don't realize how good they've got it.
Yeah, it's because I was having this discussion with a friend of mine once more. Is once you realize that in life, when you were born, your menu was preset. Is sometimes because you accept your choices, you sometimes think you're eating off the menu. You're actually not.
Mm-mm.
Whatever it is that you are the kind of education, social background, the people that you're born into, was all preset for you. So screaming and shouting during the process of your during your dining process is actually a waste of time. It's the same as when you see a rich kid complaining about how unfair it is for poor people. Then you're like, but you are eating from that menu. So what are you going to do about it? Because you cannot, for the life of you, you can never be poor. You can't do anything about it. It's the same as with poor people. Is as soon as they realize where they are, and I'm just saying it like generally. I'm not saying that people must just accept that bullshit of life and then just be poor. And no, I'm just saying as soon as you understand and accept where it is that you're at, then life becomes easier. Because even during a protest, we're not all protesting for the same reason. We just
I don't get, like, I really don't get these like
mass protests.
No, I don't get white girls in their 20s holding up like Black Lives Matter signs. I don't understand that.
Yes.
Like, why are they? First of all, you don't have any space. You've got no agency here.
Yeah.
This is a
your jurisdiction.
It's finished. It's
stopped somewhere.
You have no jurisdiction here.
Sorry, Sheriff. You cannot arrest this.
And all you're doing, all you're really doing, is you're trying to get black people to go, oh, she's one of the good ones.
Yes.
So it's virtue signaling.
Yes.
Oh, but nobody, and nobody cares.
Nobody cares.
Nobody's interested in those white girls.
Yes.
The black guys are like, what's wrong with those chicks?
Yeah.
And the white guys are like, what's wrong with those chicks?
Yeah.
Nobody's looking at them. And I'm not just picking on the girls. It's the guys, too. I saw a white guy.
I've seen
I saw a white guy with a big poster like, the best is this morning, someone sent me a picture of...
We have to start our own tribe.
Listen to this.
Forget there's, you not having a tribe.
I feel like I'm being taken to church today.
There's a guy holding up a poster saying, stop Islamophobia. And then there's a woman standing next to him holding his hand, holding up a placard saying, women's rights, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, well, you know the Middle East and women's rights are not compatible.
Right now, as we speak.
You realize, honey, you're like, you think the West is mean about women? Yeah. Just try the Middle East.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, it just, like, people are so hypocritical.
Yeah, we like participating. It's also FOMO. We don't like missing out.
It's FOMO, that's right.
I remember I went to an EFF rally because of FOMO.
You went, and what was it like?
That must have been
I was disappointed at the order.
What do you mean?
The order was amazing. It was
You expected it to be more ratchet.
I expected, because already I was feeling inside. I was like, this is... It was during the day, actually, of the public protector report.
Oh, you went to, you went on that
I
march?
I went to Union Building. Oh, so
I was going
to
do that.
Me and Simi were there. I bought a beret.
Simi Aref,
we were there. I bought a beret.
Did anyone recognize you in the march?
Yeah, but they were also like, we're too angry to... We're angry. I was like, same.
Yeah?
Don't you just hate it when it rains and TSTV doesn't... I'm angry. Then I realized how hypocritical I was when I parked my car and then I parked it by the buses way there.
Then
we were walking because somehow, subconsciously, I knew that parking that car there does not kind of gel with the cause.
Yeah. People would have said,
Yeah, so then we are there walking and then Julius came and then read the public protector report. And then afterwards he said, I know they're expecting us to be wretched and cause chaos. I want us all to just go home now and we'll wait for another day. We're not going to give these dogs, he called the police, these dogs the blood that they want because they want to suck our blood. No. Okay. So he says, we're all going to go home. I swear to you, at the lawns of the Union Building outside, everyone knew exactly where to go. There was even a battalion that picked up trash after.
Oh, you're joking.
I swear. I was there going, when are we? Let's throw something.
And nothing.
Guys!
Nothing.
Are we picking them up to throw them? Everyone was like, okay. So people knew exactly where to go.
Yeah.
And I was like, have I been misinformed by E News?
Because they wanted it to be drama, right?
Yes, they wanted so much drama. And I was like, we underestimate the emotional intelligence that poor people have. It's people with nothing. They spend their time thinking about how they can preserve the little that they have. Even those state resources, they'd see them as their own. Yeah. They're like, I can't mess this up. This is for my children.
Right.
And for me, because with our entitlement, we think we should care about the Boomgate communities that we live in. That's where we don't make noise. That's where we turn down the volume as we drive in. That's where we don't invite people that are going to come and cause a ruckus there. But those people think, and I'm saying those people consciously, because I can't force to be one of them. I'll be a liar. I even felt it when I was there with them that if they would find out, it would be, I'm fake here. I'm no different from that white girl holding up a poster saying Black Lives Matter. So at that point, I had to introspect and look at myself. And I was like, they care more than we do about our own things.
So what are you guys saying here? Are you saying then that people shouldn't bother caring about other people's plights because, well, I'm not a black man, so it's not my problem. I don't care.
I just think it's got to be real.
Yeah.
Like, you can't do it for the wrong... You can't do it to go, love me, I want attention,
yes,
but I'm a good person.
But you do want attention, though. That's the whole point of those kinds of movements, is to create attention around...
You make a difference where you can, like, in a real way. Like,
you
raise money, you take time, you actually sit and chop something out of wood and you make something for someone, or you...
I like that.
There's got to be something you do that actually helps someone else.
And sometimes...
Making a noise about helping
sometimes
them.
Sometimes minusing yourself from the equation, you're doing the universe a favor. Sometimes you that vibe that you create, that you bring within a situation, is not necessary. If you were not there, there would be less agitation or discourse in the work environment, or you came in and you find something working and you came and disrupted it. Sometimes the absence of you is the greatest favor you can do for social cohesion.
That is such a good point. You know, I started watching this this documentary that everyone's talking about on Netflix called The Crown. It's all about the Queen of England when she kind of became the Queen. She was this young lady, 25 years old.
That was Gareth's first crush.
So listen to this. Someone says to her, your job is to do nothing. Mm. And she looks at them. She's like, no, but I'm surely here to make to do something useful. I said, no. If there's something going on in government or whatever, it takes such huge strength to actually pull yourself out of the situation, to look at it objectively and do nothing.
Yeah.
You could advise this one. You could talk to that one. You can listen to people.
Yeah.
But you don't have to do things. Yeah. Now, my biggest frustration in the world,
that's
a big deal, right?
That's huge. But it's the same. We almost came full circle. Sorry to
this
just
is it.
It's like the thing we said,
It's taken me a long time. I always feel like unless I'm doing something, I'm wasting time. I'm taking up other people's time. I'm not being useful as a citizen. Yeah. I'm not being productive. All that kind of thing. It to the point where I can't relax. To the point, you were.
Yeah.
How did you change it?
Is I had to realize that what is it that I'm getting outside that makes me go out there and do comedy maybe. And for me, comedy was a big thing. And for 2 years, I hated how I heard how aloof I was and how I thought I didn't need the money and I do comedy when I want. And I couldn't explain the feeling that I felt inside every time I went to comedy clubs. I couldn't explain the energy that I felt when I was there, the kind of the low vibrating energy that just emanated, and we were responsible for spreading it across the audiences that came there to have fun. And we were kind of responsible as a generation at that time that I took time off spreading this negativity and this despair and this fake hope sometimes, because it helped our punchlines. And we forgot that it was going into people's lives that go out there and interact with other people. When I realized that and the penny dropped, I realized that the gratification that I get from the audience's clapping was not enough for me to spread this message of confusion and of disillusion and sometimes negativity real that permeated within our lives. And then we came to stage and we kind of vent and we let it out. Mm. But I realized that when I'm with myself and I can face those things directly without any excuse or any group counseling, and it felt better. And sometimes it's because we are born into roles, but we don't take them up until we're ready. So sometimes we get told what to do. And especially when you're in entertainment, is you come in here to find yourself. Whether you're a musician, you're a DJ, you're a radio host, you're a comedian. Basically, you're here to find yourself. But as soon as you bump into yourself, there's so many people involved that you kind of carry their plight. Your manager needs to eat and he's got a child in university. Your helper has got a child at preschool. And then now you're like, if I stop doing this thing that helped me become all of this to all these people, then I have failed. Then you pick up another role now of being the guardian of the realm. And that is a very heavy burden to bear. You are not responsible for how the world works, for social order, for social cohesion. You're not responsible for taking people's kids to university. But it's very evident with us in entertainment, is when we have stopped saying something significant and we have stopped making an impact, it's because we have bumped into ourselves within this thing that we're doing. But there's so many people involved that you can't let them down.
But how did you break out of that? Because you're getting me depressed now.
It made me an enemy to many people, because I had to tell my manager to stop booking things. And I don't think in the order of importance, then I was high up again. I had to walk away from a deal that I love so much. And then I walked into a meeting one day, it was a Strat meeting, and they said, how are things going? We're looking forward to next year. I said, I'm not, because I'm not doing it anymore. And I said, you'll iron out the details with my agent. And I was like, Lynn, have a good time. And I was like, I'm out of here. Then it took that for me to realize how much of me was invested, but not only physically, emotionally, about how I really felt inside about a lot of things. And it exposed me to other people that I didn't want to be with. But slowly I had to do that.
This is
slowly.
What the hell happened with you?
It's because you realize you're going to have to jump or get pushed in anything that you enjoy the most and that gives you most exposure.
Hang on. I need to know, what have you left behind in all of this? And do you have any regret about leaving any of that behind?
I think the first notable thing was I left a lot of traveling behind because of my daughter. Mm-hmm. And not because I was forced, because I enjoyed it. It stopped me from having a lot of friends in comedy because I wasn't with them for 2 years. And I was just doing my own thing, gardening and meditating, and also leaving the association with the bank is, it just obviously leaves a big hole in your pocket.
And they wanted to carry on, huh?
We were having a good time.
Yeah.
I can't say 100% for sure, maybe because I didn't stay for the whole meeting, but we were all having a good time. We were just doing great things. So when I felt, but it wasn't also premeditated. It's at that moment I reacted to the feeling.
Let me just explain, all right, because I've just quit Idols. Yeah, last week, last Monday.
Officially, like...
Yeah, I'm out. I'm done.
He's leaving.
I'm in the same. I'm in the same space you are.
You'll
the
feel
moment.
Alive.
You want to finish. You want to just be tidy about your life. You want to finish this thing. You want to finish that thing, and you want to start something new.
Yes.
You clear your plate.
You're closing your book of life.
Yeah. You're closing chapters.
Yeah.
And you're moving into new chapters. Yes. Right. This is good stuff.
Yes.
I get you.
Yeah.
But people in South Africa right now, especially in the entertainment business, are looking at you going, what are you, insane?
Yeah, because it's fear.
Are you high?
It's fear.
You said no to bank money?
Yeah.
Commercial bank? Yeah. There are comedians right now who are eating porridge from, it's expired. There are people in the entertainment business right now who have no fuel in their cars.
Yeah.
And they're listening to you going, what's your problem? What's wrong with your fucking head?
Yeah. My problem is I wanted to meet myself. And I think I met myself and I enjoyed myself. I think I realized for so long I was eating off the menu. I was not born into privilege. And none of poverty did not exist until someone showed me that it existed. So for me, living in a, for example, I'm not saying I'm going to live there soon. For me, living in a four-room house in Mamelodi was not abnormal. There were a lot more four-room houses than there were bigger houses.
Yeah.
It's only with life later on that I realized that this is unfair. It was the inequality of it. It was inequality more than poverty. It was because even people that are rich choose to have a big house or not.
Yeah.
So it was never about wealth. It was just inequality that I haven't adjusted and dealt with. But only in adulthood can you really make peace with inequality, because you have to realize where it affects you directly. Because sometimes you'll take up a cause for anything. You'll be like James Dean, that movie, Rebel Without a Cause.
Mm.
What are you rebelling against? What do you got?
Exactly.
You'll just be that guy who just fights every cause. So now I realize for myself, I realized I was happier with very, very, very little. And I realized that the come up is actually the best part, is when you're going, when you're first doing a photo shoot for Idols. That felt good. When you first photo shoot officially, when you show up and then they someone even goes, who are you? Are you the guy from Five? And you go, yeah. Then you get dressed and then they take a photo. Those were the best times, Gareth. When you could walk into a filling station and no one had expectations to ask you anything more than 95 or diesel. Those were the best times of your life. When you could speak to an estate agent and they weren't saying, but you want to enjoy it here because there's people, and I know people like you enjoy privacy. Before all of that, life was good.
Yeah.
But then you realize as soon as you, because no one ever gives you a checkered flag. No one ever says you're here now, you're earning a lot. No one says you've got a nice car. No one ever gives you the proverbial pat on the shoulder.
Oh, that's such a big deal. This is major
I am blown away by this conversation that
so
we're
no
having.
One ever gives you the proverbial pat on the shoulder or the checkered flag. So you keep seeking it. And meanwhile, you're picking up other people's causes.
A lot of us think that the more we have, whether it's money or things, or rooms in the house, or V's on the car,
the better
or stamps
feel
on your passport,
the better sometimes we'll feel about ourselves.
Yeah, because now it's a new thing to say where you've been. If you haven't been to New York, and I have consciously stayed away from New York, I'm like, why is the thing now to say that I've been to New York? It's a new conversation.
Is that a thing?
Absolutely, it's a new conversation starter. Have you been to New York in winter? You're like, where? Have you been to New York in winter? And I'm like, why?
It's cold.
No, just everybody.
It's cold and shitty.
Have you watched the Knicks game?
Okay, I see what you
mean.
Have
you seen the ball
drop? It's like it's the new status.
It's a new status
symbol.
Yeah, because it's the process of getting a visa.
Okay, but what is our South African pecking order? Because every
it depends which demographic you are from.
Every civilization, I hate to go here, but we've got to talk about this because I think it preoccupies us even if we're not aware of it. What is the South African hierarchy?
Yes.
Is it politicians at the top? Is it white monopoly capital? Is it people who are tribal leaders?
Mm-hmm.
is it mothers? I mean, who is it that, who's in charge of South Africa? Like, who makes the rules? In terms of social, you talked about class earlier.
Yeah.
So who makes those rules?
There's this new community that's budding up now. It's the ones that are, you see, because in the last five or 10 years, we've been exposed to people that we underestimate that became great. Steve Jobs, whoever. There's that thing of we watch autobiographies and we go, no one ever thought at 35 he was going to be great at 40. Like, so we have that now. So now there's these people that go, you don't know me, eh? You are sleeping on me, eh? So when they say things, we're like, oh, yeah, he said it first, so it must be true. There's a lot of that. Because you can even think of it with Julius. I remember I was in Cape Town 6 years ago and I made fun of how Julius is going to be the black superhero. And everyone, I remember even the promoter said to me after, I said, I don't think you should do that bit. Then I was like, why? Then he said, but it looks like it's upsetting people because it's something that will never happen. And here we are today. Yes. We're relying on Julius to kind of uncover Guptas for us and the public group. But we're like, weren't we the same people that called him names?
We called him stupid.
We called Thuli Madonsela names. So we've been so wrong. We are so bad at calling it. Yeah. We even called it
Brexit,
wrong.
Brexit, Trump.
I told people that Trump was going to win. I told them.
You did?
I did, and everyone thought I was nuts. They were like, but you've never been to New York, that's why. I was like, you see. But now it's that we are scared on sleeping on people, on an idea. We are scared now. It's FOMO has become real. So it's those people that we think know more than us, but they haven't reached there yet, that we are now listening to, that determine how things work.
But that's not a bad thing. If those people are the ones at the top of the pyramid, let's just think about this for a second. What you're really doing is you're saying if someone has good ideas, then maybe we should treat them a little bit better. Maybe we should be open to listening to them. Yeah. Is that a bad thing?
But they mustn't tell us until they've done it.
Oh, okay. So you think it's like false expectation.
The new thing now is, for example, on Instagram, then you'd be like, this thing is so special to me, but I'm showing you guys how special, how God has blessed me with this thing.
Hashtag blessed.
Yeah, that's false humility.
So you're like, are you inspiring people, or are you actually telling them that? Not even showing off. You're basically saying, I am so far ahead that you will never catch up. So the closest you can come to this thing is through me.
So who's that? I mean, is that like Somizi?
No.
Because he does that. He puts up pictures of
I don't follow him.
He puts up pictures of how great his life is. And I mean, I like Somizi, so I don't have beef here.
Some of my favorite people don't tweet about or then Instagram their real lives. Or they don't put themselves in there. So I don't follow. I don't follow. But I've seen it. You know when you go, because it's always nice to go to explore and see what the people that you're following are going through. And I'm like, is this what you're going through? No wonder you're depressed.
But isn't everyone's favorite comeback, it's my Twitter account, I can do what I want.
Absolutely. And I love being, I think if I lived in the 70s or 60s, I would have had a 9mm cam and I would have been involved in snuff films. Because I love being a voyeur. I think this has allowed me to sit back and watch people choke on their words and their actions. Because I'm like, everything is numbers. If you buy a 2 million rand car, it probably costs you like 45,000 rand a month to pay, with 5,000 rand insurance, depending on where you live. Multiply that about 12 months, and you've got 2 months to pay this thing. So for 7 years, you've got this burden. I will be suffering you for 30 seconds.
Yeah.
You've just sentenced yourself to living up to your own expectations. Because no one will ever ask you where that thing is should you not have it. Because no one cares. People move on. How many of your followers have died since they started following you? You don't care because you don't keep numbers.
We don't even know.
We don't even know how many of them have data or not.
Are until they're a number.
There could be millions of my followers who are dead.
So are you telling me I gave myself a 45,000 rand debt for 7 years to impress someone who doesn't exist? What a time to be alive. I'll be here watching. So keep tweeting your Instagram. Buy your 5 million rand house. Buy a Bugatti. Buy a Bentley. For all I care.
Keep the economy going.
I'm like, we need to watch people like you explore.
You're not here for your health. And you didn't come in to
for
philosophize.
Grapes.
You didn't come in here to philosophize with me either. You've got a new show. It's called OCD. Obviously can't deny.
Look, Gareth.
What's this?
Me and you meet once a year. I've never asked you for your number, and there's a good reason for that. When I spend time with you, I want to spend time. You see, now I feel like we've vented a year long.
We've got to plug your show, dude. I mean, it's happening 14 December 2016 at the Atterbury Theatre in Pretoria, 15 December 2016 at Goldreef City's Lyric Theatre. See, if I don't do this, you're not going to do it. I know what you're
doing. No,
about.
No.
Then people will be pissed off with you.
No.
Because you didn't plug the thing.
No. They must just be happy. They must be happy for me for a change. once a year I do something. This is my birthday present.
I like that we don't have each other's numbers. There's no pressure.
No.
Like Robin talked, he forced me into a lunch once and then...
And he said you took a rain check. Yeah. And I wasn't surprised. I was I do that all the time.
Because I just...
He made him commit to the lunch during the interview.
You love him to bits, but you can't
Robin,
do it.
Robin, I just can't go to lunch. I can't do it. I can't do this. But I hate commitments like these social commitments.
It's so heavy, right? Because you're going to have to bond with the waiter as well. Because people never think that now I have to make friends with a waiter.
Yeah.
I have to...
It's draining.
Do I have to look at him and go, Sure, Simon, Ukraine. Why is it the process of having fun with you opens me... It's like marriage. Because I want you, now I have to know your aunt.
And marry you into your family, yeah.
That's what stops people from doing... But I get you completely
Yeah. You don't want... And it's not even about the people. Here's the thing that happens to me. Mm. I commit to something, then I hate that I've committed to something.
Yeah.
Then I try to get out of it, but usually I follow through. Yes. And then on the way there, I'm going, I really don't want to do this. I wish I'd stayed at home. And then when I get there, I'm cool. Then when I get there, I actually have fun. But it's getting there that's the problem.
I have a place that you must go to that I think will solve all of this for you.
What, the therapist?
No. Should I tell you this on air?
Yeah, go.
The Buddhist temple in Bronkhorstspruit.
Really? Have you got into that?
I go there religiously.
It's a beautiful place.
Have you been?
Oh, I've driven past.
I'm not Buddhist by any stretch of the imagination.
But do you go there on retreats? What happens at these retreats?
Like it's an amazing place. Basically, they've got three temples, but they've got this huge one. Mm. Where the steps leading up to the temple, so it's basically like a Shaolin monk movie. Mm. When you walk in there, it's in the middle of Bronkhorstspruit. Imagine that.
What a place to have a Buddhist temple.
You walk up the stairs and you kind of reflect, because the stairs apparently are made in a way that as you're going up, you're just reflecting on what you're going to meditate on when you get up there. And it's not forced, because I used to think meditation is, you're sitting there and then, no, it's just basically sitting down and recalibrating. Because the time that you spend sitting down and doing nothing, and I do this at home as well, is you realize that the world doesn't stop because of you.
Yeah.
It's if once you've made yourself super important in the world and you've said, like the thing that you said about you will commit to something because someone has told you you are that guy. Once in a while, long time ago, even maybe recently, they said, that guy will never let you down. Eh? If it's really important, he'll come. Then you still have that in you. Then you're like, okay, then you don't want to be late because someone has said, yo, I hate people that don't respect other people's time, but I'm glad you're not that guy. So you kind of, you're just living other people's expectations, but Gareth does not want to go. But when you get there, it's the Gareth that carries you through because you kind of open yourself up to the experience. Then you go, this wasn't actually that bad.
Yeah.
So you've used you dashed with other people to get through this process. But as you were in the moment, you used the entire you to enjoy the moment. So when you are sitting there going, actually being stuck in traffic and committing and thinking what I'm going to wear and picking this food that I'm going to eat and paying for the bill or discussing if we're paying or not, that was me.
Yeah.
But the rest of the time, it was other people's expectation that they've laid on me for so long.
I have on my list of things, and I do a list every year, which is another reason I pressure myself.
Because you're white.
Well, yeah, but also I'm obsessive compulsive. Yeah,
that's why the show is called OCD. You know that, right?
Well, that's what I want you to tell me about just now. But here's my list of things, and here on it is learn to meditate.
You're lying.
I swear to God. I'm going to highlight it for you. I want you to see this.
You're lying.
Look at that. Learn to meditate. There it is on my list.
You...
No, dude. Really. Because I think...
You don't know how to?
No, I don't know how to. Mm-mm. I don't know. I don't know how to clear my mind. I got so much shit running through my head. Most of it's pointless. Most of it's stupid.
Yeah.
Nobody cares about what...
Yeah.
It's noise.
Yes.
And it's other people's noise.
Yes.
Or it's the news.
Yes.
Or it's opinions I think I have and then I...
Yes. You change them.
Yeah. I need to clear that noise.
The simple example of seeing that you cannot get stuck in an idea is you must, whenever you switch on your TV in the morning and see what channel it was on, mm-hmm. and see if you could carry on watching the same channel. That informs how you think as a person. It shows your evolution during the time when you're even conscious. Mm. Is you've changed your mind about that certain idea or that message that was going throughout before you went to sleep. And sometimes thinking about how you felt as you went to bed determines, you must check your phone call list and see who the last person you spoke with, the kind of WhatsApp you sent, the kind of emails that you got, the kind of TV show that you were. You'll see that there's a pattern here where it kind of puts you in a good space starting tomorrow or in a bad space starting tomorrow. And we never are conscious of that because we don't want to be conscious. And I think with meditation, I've realized it's not it, because you cannot clear your mind. Is everything takes priority in your mind, because you go from the things that you would like to do, the things that you can do, and the things that you are able to do. So we always settle for the things that we are able to do, because I would like to go to space, but I can't do that, but I can fly to Durban now.
You want to get to space?
You see what I'm saying? I'm saying
you want to get to space?
I'm good. So there's that hierarchy of thought. Deep. So with meditation, you can never clear your mind. You just have to clear out in the hierarchy of thought what is doable for you at that present moment. Okay. As I'm sitting down here with my legs crossed and my arms and my hands and my palms within each other, what can I do now? I can only introspect. That's the only thing I can change. It's you at that moment. So there's no way. And it's a whole lot of nonsense that scares people from meditating, is because you don't realize that it's when you're sitting there, there has to be a thought that takes precedence, and it's usually about you, which is the one person that you never give precedence to throughout the day. It's you. You can only sit there and go, I want to do this properly. That's your mantra. You repeat the thing over and over again, even saying, I want to concentrate. You're already doing it.
And that's meditation.
That's meditation. Now spend 30 minutes, 5 minutes, an hour. I can do it while I'm driving. I can do it anywhere now. And I find that it makes me feel so much better. And it's made me so less judgmental.
How's your daughter?
She's brilliant.
How old's she now?
She turned 8.
Jeez.
In September.
Sure.
Yeah. Wow. And I'm like, I feel like such an old man. And I love it.
Another 8 years and she's really going to... She's really going to be making your life.
Yeah, let's see how meditative and reflective you are in this.
And when she becomes a teenager,
guy with pubic hair pitching up at your door.
Me,
I'm any, here for your daughter.
Any person that takes that will allow me to watch the TV more is welcome at my house.
Do you ever switch your phone off and put it away?
I've learned not to do that.
Why?
Because by the time it goes on, I have to explain. Is it just keep it on and people call and call? Because I like when, if your phone is on and no one can get hold of you, they make up an excuse for you and say, you're probably swimming, ne?
Mm.
Oh, you're probably maybe driving. Yeah, because now you can't say driving anymore because everyone's got Bluetooth.
Mm-hmm.
So you're probably in a meeting, ne? And I'm like, yeah, that's exactly. If that's what you'd like for me, I'll accept.
They make it up for
you. Yeah, so, but if your phone is off, they go, yo, are you okay? I tried the whole day. Are you good? Yo, yay, look, yay.
All right, I got a suggestion. I can't believe I'm going to suggest this now. But why don't you and Rabin and I, we kill two birds with one stone.
Mm-hmm.
We all do like a pre-Christmas lunch or something. We go somewhere nice that's convenient for all of us. We don't stress about it.
I live in mid between Centurion and Midrand.
Yeah, that's fine for me. Lives. Then Rabin must drive.
Yeah. Yeah, actually.
Rabin must just drive to the
north. Are you okay with that?
Wait, must it be a long... Because I love long... There's include biltong.
Anything you want.
I love biltong, you know that.
And then you say we take a long lunch. Like, you don't set an end to it.
Should it be a long lunch or a long drive to and back from the lunch?
Oh, dude, I don't. You see, you're being like a girlfriend.
No, I feel.
Now you're being like a girlfriend. I
feel jealous. If we're going to have a long lunch and a short drive, then I feel jealous of the people overhearing our convo.
Oh, my God.
Then I'm like, but what about our quality time? So it should be a cross between the two.
No.
It takes us a while to get there.
But who wants a long drive, though?
We like driving. I like driving.
I don't mind driving as long as there's not traffic.
Yeah. I love driving. So don't worry yourself about me.
I just have one question before Eugene leaves.
Yeah.
So a couple big time celebrities have come in here and told us about this like Illuminati WhatsApp group with Trevor Noah. Are you in it?
No. I've only started using WhatsApp a year ago.
Have you heard of it?
I've never heard of it.
There's like a, yeah, Anela's in there, and Trevor. We don't know if it's true, obviously. But
Sizwe Dlomo. Popinchongwane.
Kayadlanga.
All the, you know, all the Xhosa strong.
It exists.
The Xhosa strong.
You know, I know that they're all friends.
Yeah.
But if they want to communicate with each other at the same time, they would need to have a WhatsApp group.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So
it does exist.
The probability of a WhatsApp group with those people that happen to be friends does exist. So that we can be 100%
off. Don't treat me like an idiot.
Purely because of what we've deducted from this conversation is they are all friends. They all have mobile telephones. And they
are patronizing us.
And they are with it in terms of technology.
What is it that they are claimed to do?
What do they do?
Do they make up laws?
I don't know why Flex makes it sound as if it's...
Flex, tell us.
It's one of those groups that you can't go and ask someone to add you. It's more like a communal vote within the group. And if they all agree you're a big-time, massive celebrity, they'll add you to the group.
Also, your qualification is your status.
It's like their own Illuminati.
Yeah, good luck to them.
Powerful.
Powerful stuff, ne? I feel like we're left behind. You know, we're still struggling with the lunch here.
Mm. Okay, well, let's... nobody else
cross between. A cross between, Gareth. Just commit to that at least. A cross between a long drive and a long lunch.
Robin.
But please, let the menu not be complicated, please.
Robin, come here, you piece of shit.
I struggle with long menus. Can you please also not be...
What do you...
Come here. What? Yeah, here, this microphone, right there.
What's happening over there, guys?
You are rather complicated on this long drive, long lunch, / short drive, long...
Yes, yes.
Sit in a park and order Mr. Delivery and chill, whatever.
No.
Mr. Delivery and chill.
But how do we direct him to...
All right, we'll figure it out.
No.
No, we're going to. We're going to... You're not going to leave.
Okay, who can I trust? Who can I trust?
The show.
Who can I trust?
I will do
but
this.
I don't want you to go home and feel anxious about this now.
I'm going
to
do it. I'm not
And feel like, now nah, Eugene has left his culinary taste on my hands.
Please believe me. I like spending time with you too.
Okay.
I want to do this.
Okay.
Okay, this is a genuine heart's
desire.
No,
I believe you.
100% Gareth. The arrangements we must just figure out this morning or it'll never happen. All right, let me wrap it up with the... Jesus, Eugene Quaza. Listen, you've got to see this guy's show. 14 December 2016 at the Atterbury Theatre in Pretoria. 15 December 2016 at the Goldreef City Lyric Theatre in Johannesburg. Get those tickets while they're hot because they're not going to last for long and they're going to be sold out very, very quickly. Make sure you get in. OCD is the name of the show. Obviously can't deny, not obsessive compulsive disorder.
This is CliffCentral.com.